Welcome to the Full of Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 5:20 British Summer Time. Now, this is the big picture long-term Friday audio. But before we kick off on the long-term type stuff, let's just have a quick look at the markets and what they're doing today. Well, Europe had been relatively well, it opened steady, a little bit stronger this morning. However, University of Michigan figures came out early in the U.S. session. They were quite a bit below expectations. The expectations were around 92.5. They came in at 89.1, so that's well below what people were expecting, and that has led to a fair sell-off in U.S. markets, and that really kicked the stuffing out of Europe. The DAX had been up early in the day, but it closed down a percent and a half. The S&P MIB, which is the Italian index, was down 323 points, almost 1%. The CAC was down 0.82 of a percent. That's down 35. Pretty much everything closed down more than half a percent, and many things almost 1% in Europe. So, what that has done to a lot of these indices, and you'll see there on some of the charts I posted on the comment of the day, it's pulling them down out of these short-term ranges that they were in. And it's making a lot of these European indices look a lot more toppy now. There was definite risk there over the last couple of days and into last week when we started seeing lower highs and then lower lows. And today, particularly in the DAX and in the MIB and in the CAC, you're seeing these breakdowns from which were what were relatively tight ranges. But a little bit more about that in a couple of minutes. Moving on to Asia. Nikkei was steady in here. It was up 34. The Hang Seng was up 93 points, but still underneath that 15,000 level. I wouldn't be particularly bullish on it until I saw it break back above that 15,000. I think there's probably a bit more of potential downside there. And Australia was pretty steady at 28. There was a bit of a downward dynamic on New Zealand, and I think I posted that in the comment of the day. I can't quite remember. If I haven't, I will post it on Monday. But just moving back then to some of the commodities. Well, oil today is pretty steady. It's up 21 cents, 67.70, so still below that $68 dollar level. It's not really going up as quick as it has done, so it does look like we're getting a little bit of loss of momentum here in oil. Natural gas is up 20. It's at 9.97. It had been down about 50 cents yesterday when I was recording the audio, but it made a lot of that up, and it's up again today. So definitely consolidation here underneath that $10 level for natural gas. Copper is having a particularly good day today. It's up 360 in the U.S. at 168.50, so that's pretty good action here on the copper contracts. Looking at some of the other industrial metals, there's really not an awful lot going on there. As I was saying yesterday, that they looked like they were going up towards the end of last week, and they just haven't done that. So it's still very much wait and see there. We are seeing a little bit of further dollar weakness in here today. The euro is up 22 points at 123.23. The yen is up a little bit as well. It's down against the dollar. It's down 20. The dollar is down against it 28 points. That's at 109.76, and cable is up 30 points at 108.63. So we are seeing that little bit of dollar weakness continuing to creep in here. Looking at what's happening then with the precious metals. Gold is up 60 cents, still underneath 440. Platinum is up 1, it's at 898.5, so still under 890. Sorry, excuse me, under 900, excuse me. And silver is down 5, it's at 677.5. So what we're seeing there in silver is that it's actually broken now down below what has been the bottom of the range. And that's leaving quite a bit of open space underneath it. I mean, the next support is really around 650. So the brave would be buying here, but I think it would be catching a falling knife. And I think if I do go into these precious metals, and I almost undoubtedly will, I think I'll stay away from gold because gold is still very much top of the range. So is platinum, but silver is right at the bottom of the range. It's breaking down and out of the bottom of that range. So when I see that first upward dynamic, I think it'll be silver that I'm going to go for. And Palladium is up 20 at the moment, so 183. But Palladium really is the laggard, and that won't you won't see really good gains in Palladium until the other ones have gone absolutely gangbusters. Looking at some of the grains are continuing to be weak in here today. Just pull that that table up, and corn is down 2.5. It's at 204, and soybeans is up 4 and a quarter. It's at 602. So a small bit of support there around 600 for soybeans. But these are definitely ones to watch because they are getting cheap in here. Now, moving on to sorry, one word then about bonds and treasuries are pretty flat on the day, down 3 points at 116.29, so pretty steady. And bunds are up 14 points, 123.44, so very steady in there. Not a lot to say about bonds in the short term, but let's talk more in the long term. Let's kick off with the equity markets. And we think that equity markets are in a secular bear market. And we define that as a generational long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. What that really means is that it's a lengthy process of mean reversion for Wall Street. So what it really means is that investors are going to get more. Their expectations for yield from their equity investments is going to rise. On right now, and especially back in 2000 at the height of the bubble, but we're still very much in that rehabilitation stage. The expectations for yield were very low because everyone was thinking growth stories. So they were buying equities because they thought the price was going up. Now, bear markets. What people seem to think a bear market is when stock prices go down, but that's not really the case. What we anticipate this secular bear market, that's a very long-term, generational long period of PE ratio contraction, rising dividend yields, but it'll come in rolling waves. So you will have good bull markets within a secular bear market. Just like we've had now, we've been enjoying a secular bull within, sorry, a medium-term bull within a secular bear market for the last couple of years. It does look like that's coming to an end. Now, we have been saying that for a while, and in the medium term, we've been pretty wrong because stock markets have gone up really very well. We're now at another period where they look like they're starting to turn around, and this could be the beginning of a fairly serious reaction, but it's too early to say that right now. What we do know is that equity markets right now are starting to look toppy from a short to medium term perspective. Over the long term, are we going to see new lows here? It really is too early to say just yet. But what we can say is that this type of reaction of this bull market within the secular bear is to be expected. But we can't let ourselves get carried away on the bull theme because equity markets are in a long-term bear market. The yield on the S&P is currently 2%. Back at the very nadir of the last bear market in equities, it was yielding over 6%. So when we say that there's a period of mean reversion, and that means that we're going to head much closer to 6% than we are to 2% as regards dividend yields. One thing that we are seeing is that, and one of the things that the bulls will tell you is that corporate earnings are up, but that's only going to force, because the opportunities just don't seem to be out there. That means that stocks or that companies are going to have to pay out more in dividend. That will rise dividend yields. But the real thing to bear in mind is that markets also overshoot. So while when we talk about mean reversion, it will revert to the mean, and the chances are that it'll go past the mean and pop out on the other side, and then it'll start coming back again. Again, this is really very long-term stuff here. But how do we think it's going to actually play out? Well, there's a good chance that the S&P could have something like a glass ceiling over the 2000 highs around the 1575 mark. Now that's a good long way from where we are right now. That's the 20-30%. It's very like what happened with the Dow Jones, where there was a generational long ceiling at 1025. So what we're really saying there is that it's going to be a generation before we see the S&P making new highs. Is there any market in the world where we're on the other side of this process? And we would say that Japan is where it's just finishing, or is in the very latter stages of its bear market, and probably in the early stages of a new bull market. It had that fantastic bull run in the 80s and 90s, or well, the late 80s, early, very, very early 90s. It's been in a bear market for 15 years. From 2003, it started moving up from that. Only just recently, we've seen a break above the base. There was significant resistance around the 12,000 to 12,200 level. We saw a very good acceleration up out of that. But will we say that it has conclusively broken that 12,000 level? And I think it is too early to say that. A lot of people are now getting very, very bullish on Japan. But we're still really very, very early in this new bull market. What our sort of roadmap for this type of process is that we've seen a very extensive basing formation. It's broken through resistance. That's the break above the base. Now, in the chart seminar, we teach that acceleration is an ending signal, but that's acceleration after the market has already been trending upwards. That's not what we're seeing right now. We're seeing a different type of acceleration. We're seeing something that's been ranging sideways for a very extensive period and has now really done, has accelerated on the upside and is currently consolidating that acceleration. That is perfectly acceptable and is actually to be expected when you see a break of this magnitude. What we're now looking for is it for it to maintain the break. Often what we see is good acceleration up, and it could indeed accelerate up a little bit more because there's only a couple of hundred points. But what we would then expect to see is fairly extensive ranging where it maintains that break, but it could go sideways for quite an extensive period of time. And then we see another break above that extensive range. That's a completion of the first step above the base. There's no real need to be anxious about missing the upward move, because if Japan truly has broken up above the base, well, that is signaling to us that it's going to be almost a gen it, well, it really will be a generational period of outperformance. And since we're in the very early stages of that, there's going to be ample time to make money, particularly using leverage in that bull market. Are we going to see decoupling from the US? Decoupling is a myth. It doesn't really exist. But what we probably will see is an extension of what we call the Wall Street leash effect, and you'll often hear David talking about this. When the US is steady to rising, that will put out a flood of liquidity into the market, and all boats will float on this liquidity. So emerging markets and high beta markets will rise much faster than the US will rise, even if and will rise even if the US is going just sideways. However, when the US is falling, that liquidity gets sucked back very quickly, and what it will do is it will tug on the leash of a lot of these high beta markets, and they will fall. But the real issue here is that they will not fall as much as the US will fall. So you'll get a progression of rising lows within a bull market. And that's really what we expect for a lot of these markets, particularly Japan, which is starting to do well now. But also you look at the Indias of this world, where it has been in a fantastic bull run. Small consolidation right now, but really nothing to worry about. But a lot of people now are looking at at India and they're expecting to see a bit of a correction, what that really means is that they're raising their stops. So while India is doing fine, just one moment, I have to cough. Excuse me. While India at the moment is doing absolutely fine, what could happen if we see any kind of real bad news come out about India, it could come down and start hitting some pretty big stops. That's what will happen if people really do believe that India is due some sort of correction. But there's no evidence of that happening yet, so it's definitely a holder, but not a buyer right now. Right. Now, just another word on liquidity, because the markets right now are floating on an absolute sea of liquidity. The Asian crisis in 97, long-term capital management, Y2K, bursting of the bubble, 9/11, these were all excuses for central banks to pump money into the system. And there's no real physical rectitude right there at all. And it is the expedient method for any of the well, any politician, as opposed to paying debts out, that they can try to inflate their way out of trouble. Now, Paul Volcker came in 1980 and he pretty much killed off inflation. But inflation is now starting to creep back into the system. Interest rates in the US are rising. Now, that's going to try and keep a curb on inflation, but because inflation has been pretty much defined out of all the measures, no one ever talks about. People are telling us that there is no inflation right now, but that is simply not the case. Anyone who pays household bills, anyone who has a car, will know that there's most definitely inflation in the system right now. When inflation becomes part of the public consciousness, what that will really lead then to, that's when central banks will really have to target inflation quite heavily. We're not there right now. So we're still in the very early stages of a new inflationary cycle. We would say that treasuries are the soft underbelly of the stock market rally. Traditionally, what people would have said was that if stocks go up, bonds go down. That just doesn't work anymore. Bonds have been going up almost indefinitely, and yields have been coming down. Now, if you look at long-term charts, and I've posted them relatively regularly of yields, you'll see that yields have been falling for 20 years, and that downtrend is beginning to lose momentum. So, one thing that we're watching is to find out when are we going to start seeing the upward dynamics in that yield pattern. Because once we do, once yields start to rise, that's going to put pressure on the stock markets without the shadow of a doubt. There is an enormous group of people out there who say that bond yields can't go up, that there are the zombie buyers, as they call them. The Japanese pensioners, pension funds are buying them, they need the yield, they have to buy them. That is nonsense. Yields most definitely can go up, and they will go up, but it's only a matter of time. And when they do go up, that is going to hit the stock markets. Another issue that's going to hit the stock markets is oil. We're seeing oil today at nearly $68, and there hasn't been an enormous effect on the stock market. That doesn't mean that in the future it won't have an effect. Because the higher oil goes, the greater the number of consumers are going to be affected by it, and we're currently living in an economy that is completely dependent on the action of the consumer. So that is definitely going to have start an effect, and it will hurt stock markets. Our two big themes, and they are related. The first, the theme is supply inelasticity. So we are long-term bulls of commodities, particularly industrial metals and energy. And I would say of the two, energy more than industrial metals, purely because you cannot recycle oil, but you can recycle metals. Now, there hasn't been a lead smelter or a refinery or anything that could be regarded as basic infrastructure for the commodity market in the US for 20 years and more. So that when we say supply inelasticity, it takes a long time to build this type of infrastructure, and the industry is under-resourced. So that is really a big theme for us, and of course it is being fueled, as in every commodity bull market, there's going to be a reason. Right now it's China and emerging Asia, particularly India and some of the other emerging Asian economies. Playing China, we wouldn't say to invest in China. Communist capitalism is an oxymoron. But the best way to play China is to invest in the countries and in the companies that supply China with raw materials. So that's the oil companies and the resources companies. So commodities are one of our big plays. The other one is emerging Asia. And I know that David has a big chunk of his pension fund in India right now. And these are big reflation stories. When you look at the very long-term charts of, for example, Korea, India, Indonesia, particularly Korea, it's pretty much now at its all-time highs. India and Indonesia broke away from those long-term bases a long time ago. But Korea hasn't quite done that yet. Might be due a little bit of a correction right now, but these things are well worth watching because they have the potential to go up quite a long way. The demographics are most definitely in their favor, as is the spread of democracy and liberal markets. Now, moving on to currencies. And currencies don't have these secular bull and bear markets like we have in other asset classes. And that's simply because no country wants to have a permanently strong currency. Back when the Swiss franc was strongest currency in the world, they didn't want that for very long, and these trends never really last for more than 3 or 4 years. What we're seeing right now is that the US dollar has come down for 3 years, and it's starting to bottom out. We've seen good period of rally from the dollar, where it went from 80, which is more or less the historic low on the dollar index, up to 90, and now it's starting to come off a bit. Another thing about the currency markets is that the tops and bottoms tend to be extensive and ranging. Currencies don't generally tend to trend very much. And if you look at the top on the dollar between, say, 1999 and 2001, you'll see that it was a really rangy, messy type 3 top. There's every chance we're going to see a really rangy, ranging time and size type bottom. What that would mean is that we've seen this high around 90. It does look like it's coming down. It could come down and test those lows once again, range around a bit, and then pop back up again. So the dollar is really very susceptible here to weakness, at least in the short to medium term. Now, with precious metals, because precious metals are obviously very tied to the dollar, but that correlation is definitely seeming to loosen up here. 2 or 3 years ago, the dollar and gold traded almost in parallel, one against the other. That's just not the case anymore. But we do think that because of this massive pumping in of liquidity over the last 20 years, and because we're starting at a new inflationary cycle, that we are at the beginning of a bull market in precious metals. So we could see gold going up really quite a lot more than it is right now. But the main thing is that it's the correlation here. What we would say is that we're in the second psychological perception stage of this bull market. What that means is that gold is starting to be appreciated by the investing population as an asset class in itself, as a real store of money. When more people get on board with that idea and gold starts moving up at a more accelerated rate, then we'll be entering the third stage. The second stage, why would we say we're in the second stage right now? Because gold has made new highs in other currencies, particularly the other type of reserve currencies like the yen and the pound and the euro. So gold hasn't made a new high against the dollar, but it has made new highs against other currencies. That's why we would say we're in the second psychological perception stage. So definitely looking like a new bull market in gold and in the precious metals, or you could term it monetary metals. Anything that people are willing to accept has a real value. Our rule of thumb when trading all commodities is never pay up for commodities because these are volatile instruments and they do come down. So, looking at natural gas right now, it's at $10. This is not the time to be buying natural gas. We're in a volatile season because of the hurricane season. This will come back down, and when it hits the bottom, it's one to buy on that first upward dynamic. Not right now. What about the grains? The grains had a fantastic run already this year, and they've been coming down, and they're starting to come into support. I personally think it's a bit early to start thinking about buying them, because it does look like they could come back right into the basis. And if they come into the basis, they're going to be great buys down there because we are in a secular bull market for nearly all commodities. And the last one that is sort of coming into a buying range is silver. Silver has been the absolute laggard in the precious metal sector. It's currently at 675 and a half. That's well below the bottom of the range. It could weaken further, but it is almost certainly a buy on further. It's almost certainly a buy on an upward dynamic, and it's probably only a matter of time before we get an upward dynamic from these precious metals if the dollar continues to weaken. Well, with all that in mind, have a great weekend. It's a long weekend in the UK, so I will talk to you again on Tuesday. But have a great weekend, and thank you very much for your time.